introduce our speakers, John and Carol.
My name's John, I'm an addict.
My name's Carol, and I'm an addict.
Yeah, me and Carol decided that since this was a relationship workshop, we do this thing together. I didn't want her to go first and say something I didn't like, and she didn't want to go, you know. So we want to make sure we can talk back and forth if we have to. We think it's only fair. What we decided to do, of course I got permission from her to do this, is that we give a little background on our relationship experience and qualification that brought us to our own relationship. And I think it's important for me to say that most of my information on how to have a relationship I got from my mother and father, who growing up, my dad was a very angry, mean, raging alcoholic most of the time, and my mother was this poor mother of eight children just trying to survive that household. So I knew to be a mean son of a bitch when I got older and get into a relationship. And then along the way, where I learned to have how to have sex, I got first from a Playboy, and then a penthouse. I used to think that was sex. And then I sort of trained myself with my other juvenile delinquent buddies. And then what I didn't learn before I went in the Marine Corps, I learned in foreign countries how there's a ill repute from all over the world. So basically, by the time I came into recovery and was even qualified to have a relationship, which I may still not be qualified to have one, I had very poor background information on how to do this. So I think it's safe to say I'm still kind of learning, and I do have a good teacher. And we'll give you a little background.
Sure.
You gotta stay close to that.
My name's Carol, and I'm an addict. And so we're going to talk a little bit about our relationship past, and we're going to talk about some of the challenges we face in our relationship and how going through them together has made us stronger both as individuals and as a couple. And in terms of my relationship past, I think that if my story was going to be in the basic text, which of course it never will, but if it were, that the title might be something like Desperately Seeking Someone. Both before I got into the fellowship and after, I was constantly looking for a man and somebody, and before that, just someone to make me feel whole. And I had spent my whole, and I had some good teachers. I had a, you know, Irish Catholic Southern mother who was a played victim very, very well. And I just constantly scanned every environment I was in, looking for Mr. Right. And as I got a little bit older, and because you know when you grow up in the South, if you haven't been married by 35, you're classified as an old maid. And I hit that stage. But as I got older, I got a little bit slicker about hiding it, or at least I thought I did. But I, what I learned later was that I was searching for a man to make him responsible for my self-worth. And if any of you can relate to that, that is a setup for failure, both for you as the individual person and both for you as a couple. And it was this futile search of mine looking for someone else to make me feel whole inside. And as you can imagine, what would happen is eventually the guy would smell and feel my desperation. I would run him off, but only after I had tried to fix him up and mold him into something that I thought would look good on my arm. And as opposed to recognizing that he was a human being with his own feelings, his own personality, and maybe he didn't want to be fixed up. And so I brought that kind of a history and all of the trauma about, you know, being rejected into my relationship with John.
Anybody hit on me and think they're going to fix me up is crazy, man. You know, I always said women, they smart, but they ain't that smart, man. Anyways, you know, my first relationship I think I had in recovery, truth is, I was probably 3 years clean. Anything prior to that was just a quick fix, very quick. But I did have a girlfriend at 3 years clean. She was a newcomer, had about 30 days. And I fell madly in love with her and thought this was the woman of my dreams. And after about a month, she dumped me. and damn near killed me, but what she had done for me was open up some feelings I never knew I had. So I ended up in therapy as a result of that, and I've been in it ever since. First thing Leah asked me when she called to say, she said, "John, this is Leah," and I had no idea she was getting ready to ask me to be a speaker at a workshop. She said, "You still married?" I said, "Far as I know, all right." Good, we want you to do a relationship workshop. But after about 5 years clean, I met another woman and I ended up marrying her. My clean date's August 10th, 1982, by the way, so I've been kind of doing this for a while in recovery. But go ahead and applaud. Trust me, it's a long time. 9,748 days exactly. They gave me a cheat sheet at that desk up there. But anyways, you know, I was married to my first wife for 7 years, had a child by her, and I thought I was a really good husband. I thought it was a really good relationship. And that woman suddenly dumped me without warning and kind of ruined my life temporarily for a while. And, you know, I couldn't understand at the time why it was like it was, but I certainly know now why it's the way it was. But anyways, a few years later, I met Carol. I met her about 2 weeks after my wife dumped me. I went to Myrtle Beach Serenity Fest. I was in shock. I met her. She was some, what you see here, she was from Washington. I remember her vaguely. A year later, I went to the same convention. And I met her again, and I was a year now removed from my first wife, so I was ready to start. Actually, I went to that convention swearing off women, come to think about it. I actually had surrendered to God that I was to be single the rest of my life and screw all these women. I'll never have another relationship. That's the truth, too, actually. I even took me a newcomer to the convention. We were just going to, you know, have a good time at the convention. And when I went there, I saw her again. And I started chatting with her for a minute. And I said, "Didn't I meet you last year?" And she said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, you got a boyfriend?" She said, "No." I said, and remember the previous year, she was clean like 5 years or so. So she had some clean time. And I said, "Well, you didn't have a boyfriend last year. You don't have one this year. I'm kind of new at dating here, and I don't want to waste a lot of time." Now remember, I ain't there looking for nothing. I asked her, I said, "You a lesbian by any chance?" And she got kind of offended, if I recall correctly. And she said no and left. And I'm thinking, well, the door's open. I mean, that's how I took it. And the next day, we had a golf tournament. And Mr. Bill, who's the guy that sells the jewelry, was in charge of it. And they didn't have enough golfers show up, so they're a little short on money for the tournament. And I actually asked Mr. Bill, I said, "Look, if I give you $100, will you put me in this cart with that girl?" And he said, "Sure, give me the $100, man." So I got to playing a golf tournament with Carol, and I remember walking up to the cart, and she tells a little different version than I tell, but to me, she appeared to be very excited and happy that I was there. And we played golf together, and as I recall it, by the end of the 18 holes, she was equally as smitten as I was. But there again, she had a slightly different recollection. And by the time the weekend was over, now keep in mind, I'm down there with my newcomer just trying to have a good time swearing off women. I feel like I found the next woman of my dreams. And she lived in Washington, I lived in Richmond, and I rode home with her and I let my newcomer that I went down and would drive my brand new Cobra. I just bought a brand new Cobra like 2 weeks earlier. And I gave the keys, I said, "Here, you take the car home, go wreck it." And I found out later, he didn't even have a driver's license. But I wasn't thinking, you know, I don't think straight when I get around girls and whatnot, but. Now, she might give you her version of that, I don't know. Do you have a different one?
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
So, the first year I met John at the Serenity Fest golf tournament, I had gone down with I got clean in the Rock Creek area of Narcotics Anonymous in Washington, D.C., and I'm forever grateful for that area for helping me. And a bunch of us had gone in the car together, and we had this newcomer in our area that was always in between stages of homelessness. And I'm telling you this story because it goes to the level of how everyone in our area knew I was always looking, searching for Mr. Wright. And this guy was homeless, but we were afraid if we didn't take him down to the convention with us, he might relapse. So he gets put that first year on John's foursome. And I remember he had on an army jacket and combat boots, and he always kind of talked like it was in the middle of a nod. Even when he got clean, he kind of talked like this. And I was in a different foursome with our friends, and he goes, "Carol, I've met him, man. Dude, I've met Mr. Wright for you. He is so cool. At the turn, I'm going to introduce y'all." And, you know, it just goes to show that even Tommy, this guy in our area, like, just knew that I was always looking, searching. He's like, "He's preppy and everything, dude. You're going to love him, you know. He's like you, you know." And in fact, you know, Tommy, you know, just kind of goes to show you never know who's going to introduce you to friends, or in my case, your husband, because Tommy, the newcomer, introduced me to John. And while it didn't work that year, my search for relationships ended up playing a big part in a relapse that I had just shy of 6 years clean. And in between those two conventions, I did relapse, and in fact drove down to that convention with alcohol between my legs by myself, and you drinking the whole time the next year that I went. And you know, John told the story right, although it was just, I could not believe that the guy had asked me if I was a lesbian. And I thought, if this is some kind of new pickup line, I mean, this has got to go, you know. And so year two, we met. He said that offensive remark to me, and I stormed off. And I asked my girlfriends later that night, I'm like, "Am I dressed like a dyke? Like, what's going on? This guy from Richmond," and this is not to say anything offensive about other people, but it was just, this is what was going on with me. And they were like, "No, you know those people from Richmond. They're all rednecks, you know, just forget about it. Don't worry about it." And of course, you know, I'm sitting there, you know, at a Narcotics Anonymous convention, relapsing on the sly, which is its own form of hell. And if you haven't been through that, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy, but that was where I was at the time. So I get up for the golf tournament, and the person that was supposed to be playing with me had overslept, and all of a sudden I hear this big, booming southern voice coming towards me at 8 o'clock in the morning with a hangover. "Well, well, well, look who, move over. I'm driving and I'm in your cart." And I looked at him and I'm like, "First of all, you're not driving. And second of all, you're not in my car." And so the first 9 holes, I was so angry, and he insisted that I move over, and that he was, and I learned that he was in my car. The whole time I was so angry, I was staring straight ahead and I would not look over at him. And so that's kind of my version of our story of how we met.
We started out thinking two different things, man. You know, I really give folks a hard time for dating newcomers. I don't think you really ought to do it. And we ain't trying to glorify or glamorize the situation we were in. Trust me, I've been paying for it ever since. But you know, I think I was so attracted to Carol so fast. Before the weekend was out, she had told me that she had a relapse. And I didn't really think much of it. I'm thinking, fine, you know, you had a relapse, we can work with this, you know. You know, I was focused on those almost 6 years clean, you know. You know, that's quite a foundation. I just didn't look at her as a newcomer. It just never dawned on me that I was messing with a newcomer. And the Wednesday after she dropped me off on Sunday in Richmond, I went to Washington. We had a date. And, of course, she took advantage of me. And so, I mean, that was it. I was done. So we had this long-distance relationship from Richmond to Washington. But for the first year, she was in a horrible relapse, man. And it's like I was catching myself in love with a woman who was a chronic, cheating, lying, no good son of, you know what? She's a lobbyist by trade, so you know they can't be truthful, honest people. And I can't believe I'm pouring my life energy into this relationship. And it really got bad, but a couple good things happened. One was I found a whole new recovery family up here in the Rock Creek area. A whole lot of you folks sort of adopted me. I think a lot of you felt sorry for me for dating Carol, but you know, I had a whole new fellowship, so I thought that was really, really cool. But during this process, I did, you know, I really came to grow closer to Carol, realize what a wonderful person she is, and she's really, you know, a very valuable human being worth helping. And just one day, I just told her, you know, I think I called her line one day drinking. She was passed out, and I went to her purse and found these little airline bottles, which I never, ever would have thought of buying one of those. But I asked her, you've been drinking? She said, no. I said, what are these? I said, get in the car. So I remember I drove around for a while. I wasn't going to let her go until she said she's going to go to treatment and get help, or otherwise the relationship's over. And this is after about a year or so of going through this little game. And fortunately, she went to treatment. She did well. She stayed clean. She had a little relapse at her father's funeral a short time after that. And but then we continued to date, and we got married, I want to say almost 11 years ago now. So we've been married to be 11 years. Halloween, it's a long story. And you got 11 years clean almost too, don't you? So see, I'm your good luck rabbit, luck of rabbit's foot. She makes payments regularly for that, I think. But she might want to add to that, I don't know. Is that about right so far? Anyway, you know, a couple things I realized about this current relationship I'm in, and hopefully the last one, because I don't want to go through a whole lot of that stuff ever again, is that we have some differences. One is she's a Democrat, I'm a Republican. So right there, we have a stressful situation, at least every November at election time, whether it's local, state, or federal. And I mean, we're both pretty moderate, we're not far left or right, but enough to know there's a difference. We have the doghouse out back where I go, and she can have the house. But aside from that, I think it's safe to say we're both controlling people. We both want to be in charge. We both think we're right about a lot of things. And there's a word called compromise that comes to my mind. Now, early in our relationship, I came to the conclusion that I will never win a war with this woman, ever. It ain't going to happen. But I might win a few battles along the way. So I decided I'm going to pick and choose my battles. And for the most part, I'm pretty good with that. But I recognize today I'm a lonely, I ain't never going to win the war no matter what. So I don't even try to think that way anymore. You know, I have a daughter that she can probably tell you what it's like to be a stepmother. A child that I don't think wanted us to find each other to get married, and has really gone out of her way to try to sabotage our relationship. But today is good. She likes her now that my daughter's almost 17 and Carol likes to shop, and my daughter realizes I'm not taking her to Nordstrom, but Carol will. So I think they've worked their differences out, safe to say. You know, I'm a very, I don't know what you call it, but it isn't unlikely me not to bring a bunch of people home and not call up and let her know these things, especially newcomers. We have 7 couches in our house, and I think I should fill them all up. She doesn't like that, you know, unless I call and ask and whatnot. So there's actually a clash sometimes of, you know, differences, I think. We're on our way down here, for example. It would never cross my mind about a cheat sheet. You know, she kept wanting to know the last couple of weeks, what are we going to talk about? What are we going to talk about? I said, I don't know. I'll talk when I get in front of the mic. Quit asking. And every time she speaks, she writes down what she's going to say. And true to form, we have a sheet up here that she would like to go by, and I haven't really looked at it much. And, you know, I might want to flip the page here just to mess with them. But One thing I noticed on that piece of paper she wrote, she likes to talk about me living my dream with this organization I currently run. And, you know, we live our lives, we live our recovery on our sleeves. You know, and then I run a recovering community organization that I get to work with newcomers every day, old timers. We do a lot of stuff. We have 5 halfway houses, 38 beds, a recovery center. I should be applauded because I work with 50 knuckleheads every day, man. They don't go away either. There's more each morning. But we do jail programs. We go inside these jails that we're the only ones in, these whole institutions carrying this message. But it's a lot of work. But Carol always alludes to me living my dream. You know, that's my dream. And the only dream I ever really remember having was when I was a newcomer. I got clean in the Marine Corps, and I was probably 7-8 months clean. I was sitting on an amphibious assault ship. I was out in the Indian Ocean, which is what Marines do. They get on these ships and they go around in circles for 6 months, hoping some foreign country would mess with us so we could go kill them. And I remember, you know, all I ever really wanted, that I could ever think I ever really dreamed for, was to have a wife, to be happy in a marriage, to have a child, and to know this woman loves me and I love her, and no matter what, at the end of the day, life is good. And today, I can honestly say, I'm living that dream. That's my dream. It isn't running that organization. You're my dream. And I never would have picked her to be my dream specifically, but you know, God did for me what I couldn't do for myself, obviously. And to be married in recovery, both of us, you know, it's just every day you gotta decide. You know, it gets hard sometimes. I don't know how many of y'all be married or are married now, but every single day, when the day's said and done, I got to know it, and I believe in my heart. I got my best friend. She's got my back. I got her. And I don't really like a lot of time, but I'll take her back. You know, watch her back. And we go to marriage counseling regularly, which I wouldn't go, but she insists I go. I thought I was going there for a different reason at one time, but 3-4 years later, it's called marriage counseling now. But one time I was talking to the counseling, and I was complaining and just really telling her all this crap. And she said, "Well, John, how many of these other women want you and are hitting on you and coming at you?" And I said, "None of them, nobody. I got the only woman that wants me. There ain't nobody else out there wants me. And I know that. And I certainly don't want to blow that." And that is true. A lot of girls out there, you know who you are. You know you ain't hitting on me. So I'm well aware I got the best woman I could ever hope to get. I get that. I just don't like interfering with my control issue, if you know what I mean. I want to be in control. I want to be angry and frustrated when I want to be angry and frustrated. And I need to be allowed to do that. Well, that ain't always cool. And nor should it be either. And, you know, I think when we fight, we use words. We don't throw stuff or she screams. I don't think I scream, but she says I do. I don't recall it, but I might yell. I don't know. I don't hear good either, so I don't know if I'm talking loud or not. And I actually got the kind of hearing that doesn't hear high-pitched voices, so I really don't hear when she's talking to me. And I have a doctor's note for that. That's really true, too, by the way. Would you like to add anything to this blissful relationship we have?
To say that John and I have differences is sort of the understatement of the year. And my relationship past had been that I always sought the most emotionally unavailable bad boy in any particular room and then flew like a moth to a flame towards him. And so when John and I first started dating and he was like sending me flowers and really, you know, going after me, which was not something I was accustomed to, I said to some of my female friends in recovery, you know, this guy, I just don't know about him. You know, he's kind of conservative. He's a Republican, you know. He's working in the trades and not in an office. And, you know, I'm just not sure he's enough like me. And they were like, Carol, why don't you just, like, hang in there for another date or two? You're not used to someone who treats you nice. And, you know, there was something to that, that I wasn't. And, you know, the name of this convention is Diversity is Our Strength. And I think that for us as a couple, our differences are, in fact, one of our strengths and the things that have really worked for us. But, you know, it wasn't always like that. And in the first year of our marriage, which, like John said, I would not highly not recommend. I insisted that I get 1 year clean before we got married, but I mean, it was just by the skin of my teeth. And I had, I was also moving from the Rock Creek area to Richmond. And I don't know if anybody else can relate in here, but being the second wife when the first wife is still in recovery, can be extremely challenging. I'd never been married before, and I certainly had not been a part of breaking up their marriage, but I was treated by all of his first wife's friends in a very unwelcoming way when I first got into the rooms in Richmond, and that was hard. And I didn't realize how good recovery was in Washington. There was a lot more women. There were a lot more women of all different ages and types, and In our area, there's many fewer women, and it was harder for me to make friends at first, and I was dealing with my own recovery, being new again. And one of the things that I think actually can be a plus in our relationship, but is hard on me, is that I work in Washington, D.C., and stay there during the week, and I'm only home in Richmond on the weekends. And on the one hand, it keeps things fresh. You know, you don't have to, you know, fight about a lot of stuff. But it also, for me, I have sort of 50% of a life in Washington and 50% of a life in Richmond, and I don't have 100% of a life either place. And when the sledding gets tough in that area, sometimes, and I'm sure you'll be surprised to hear this, I like to try to pin that on John. You know, it's your fault that I have to go back and forth, when in fact it's a choice, and it's a choice that I make every day, because only thing I've ever done is politics in Washington, and I'm not really qualified to do much of anything else, so I kind of have to do that. And I make that choice to do it because it's engaging and I like it. And just like John is passionate about, you know, helping people in recovery, one of the similarities we have is that we both passionately believe in helping other people in recovery. I do it in terms of trying to get laws that discriminate against addicts in or seeking recovery repealed. That's one way that I can put my skills and my talents to work. And I could have never imagined in a million years what a gift it is to be able to actually advocate for something that I feel so passionately about, and that it's not just a job, it's something that I walk, it's talk and feel, and that we actually do as a family, which has been an incredible gift. But in the early years of our marriage, I'd say the first five, you know, both John and I think grew up with traditional ideas about, you know, the roles that men and women would take in a marriage. And I had grown up with a father that was very controlling about money. And I swore to myself as a little kid that I would never, ever be controlled by a man, and I'd never be controlled about money. And I may not be controlled by John about money, but my own pursuit of it certainly controls the way that I live my life, and it's been something that I've had to check at the door. But early on in our relationship, there was a certain level of competition, and it may not have been overt, but it was there. And what I realized later in looking back on it was like it was a power struggle about neither person really trusted the other one because of the relationship pains and traumas we had each had. And so as a result of that, it was like a Mexican standoff. You know, it was like who's going to be trust the other one first or not trust and withholding. And, you know, for me, I think that when we finally stopped that, and when John actually, I think, started doing something, it may not have been his dream, but it's certainly something he enjoyed more than just painting. And it was his own thing that he created from the ground up, from his blood, sweat, and tears. And it's grown now to serving, you know, 1,000 people a week. It gave him a sense of pride and accomplishment And he wasn't competing with my job, and he has his own thing. And that was really, really important for us. And it is, you know, our spiritual principle of unity that we have in our first tradition is really the bedrock of our relationship. And it is not only a relationship based on love and compassion and humility, but that unity is a core principle that whether we know it or not, we practice, and when we actually started living it in our marriage, it started going much better from my perspective.
You know, I was thinking, I was talking to a reporter a few weeks back, maybe a few months ago, actually. I was telling him about this event we got come up, the big barbecue cook-off, but we got on the subject of Carol coming in from Washington on Friday, and sometimes we like to cook together, and we have these little cook-offs right there in our kitchen sometimes, and I was telling her about this Uncle John meatloaf we were doing the previous week. We each were making our own meatloaves, see who was a better cook. And halfway through the project, she lost the recipe we're going by. And it's like, where is the recipe? We're at the critical point of this recipe. You got the sausage in the meat with the herbs you had to make. What do we do next? And the recipe's gone. So we search all over, and I finally found it in the cabinet where she put it away with one of the pans we were putting up, which is, as you get older, I think you realize you find things in different places sometimes, like the cream in the canned good department or something. But point is, and I think my meatloaf was actually better than hers, but I let you think yours was better because I know it's important to you to win that. We have this incredible, not only spirit of competitiveness, but yet spirit of one. And I think you can only get there you get there many ways, I guess, but you know, I think we realize what's really the most important, most valuable thing in our relationship is loving and caring for each other. We can still have our own pathways in life. We can have our own careers, we can have our own home groups, we can have our own differences, but at the end of the day, we have to sort of know we love one another. It's really simple. We got some serious problems on some other fronts, of course. I don't know if they're problems or not, she might think they are, but this job thing, she's a very busy person. I don't know how many of y'all know her and know that, but she only works 160 hours a week. I mean, I've never seen anybody work so hard, but yet I reflect on my life. I work a lot of hours too. It ain't easy running an organization like we run, and there aren't many job payoffs. Neither one of us will ever get a gold watch with what we do, but there are little milestones we go. Now, I watched Carol, for example. She worked 12 years to get a bill passed to give that equal rights to addicts, you know. And they threw a big party for it, which was pretty cool, you know. I don't go to Washington much, but when I go, it better be good. And one party was her boss went down to the water and he rented the USS Sequoia, which was the presidential yacht. And he brought the top lobbyists from the firm down and Carol and threw her a nice little party. And I stole some soap out the bathroom, though, so I got some cool souvenirs from that one. But during some of her work up there, we would come up from Richmond to, you know, like they did a picket at the White House or something, bring some newcomers up and march on these things. And we took a van load up when they had, oh God, the Speaker of the House, Rosalind Carter, a couple senators and congressmen, and there's a bunch of me and my newcomers standing behind them on the Capitol steps, and we get our picture taken, and we're in every newspaper in the country. I'm getting phone calls, that's you behind so-and-so? I said, yeah, you know, pretty cool. It's just weird, you know. Being a painter by trade for 30-something years, being an advocate for recovery, being married to this wild woman, and then doing the crazy job I do, It's like, man, thank God for this convention, you know. We were sitting out today on the balcony watching the water. I said, man, this is cool. We should do this more often, you know. You know, another thing she wrote down, she wrote something about sex on here. Hot spots, money, sex, and parenting. That's like the three big highlighted areas. Well, let me tell you about the money piece. She makes a lot more than I do. And I used to make a lot of money in my previous career. And how I ended up being, you know, in the situation I'm in, I would have never picked that for me. And I don't like it. I just don't like it. She can tell you that. I don't like having her be the big rainmaker in the family. I still don't know how to deal with that. I don't, you know, it's still hard for me. I asked her today, I think, when we get our tax check back, and I have some of that money to pay my bills, you know. She said, sure, that's what it's there for. She keeps insisting we both draw from the same pile of money, but I can't get that concept. There's something that's too complicated about that for me. And the sex piece, I'm on a lot of blood pressure medication, hereditary, and not that I do a whole lot wrong to have high blood pressure, but it definitely kills your sex drive. So I have to think ahead when I have sex. You see the commercials, right? You know, Viva Viagra. And for a woman to plan, for me to plan ahead, the woman don't always want to be there when I get there. So, there's nothing worse than wasting a $20 pill, because those ain't cheap. You know, to be there alone with the tent pole, and she ain't in the mood, you know. So then it's like, I get up in my head, you know what, I ain't gonna do that, you know. It just hurt my feelings, you know. We gotta come up with a better system here. And I think we're still working on it, actually. I mean, I love my wife. I don't think of nobody else. And then, you know, I think my desires have diminished a lot. You know, I don't know if that's normal for my age group or not. I don't know. Maybe she would like to. I mean, she's going through menopause right now. Am I allowed to say that? That's your mic.
It's dark in here, so you can't see how red I am right now. One of the things that keeps our relationship interesting and was a real problem when John and I first met was what was going to come out of John's mouth. And not only does he often use colorful language in places where it's not appropriate, he can get away with it here, but not always. But I can remember the first time I brought John to an inaugural ball for a presidential inaugural. It was when Bill Clinton was in, and of course John could not stand Bill or Hillary Clinton. And so I had to, you know, we're all in our tuxedos and gowns, and I'm like, John, now look, you cannot tell Hillary Clinton jokes at this thing. I've got all of these, you know, clients who are Democrat. They're going to be offended. They're women. You cannot do it. And the C word is out. Don't use the F word or the C word. And I was going through this whole, of course, I had my list with me. Don't say this, don't say this, don't say this, and don't say this. And so, of course, it didn't occur to me that I was going to have to go to the ladies' room and leave him alone with, you know, my clients. So I get back, and there is John in his tuxedo with Madeleine Albright, who was the Secretary of State at the time, with his arm around her, smiling, and getting this picture taken with the FBI with their guns drawn.
They were drawn.
So and still sometimes it's a challenge for me not to try to control John. And I call it getting in John, my sponsor calls it getting in John's pocket. And again, you know, what I learned over the years is that diversity and our differences are our strengths there. I remember after that first evening, I got one of my first lessons. My client called me and, you know, to thank me for entertaining. He goes, your husband is the nicest, funniest guy you can imagine. What a great husband you have. And I was like, oh my God, I was so relieved. I thought he was calling me to complain about something he had said to his wife or something. And he's like, and he has the best Hillary Clinton jokes that I have ever heard. And I was like, God, John, I cannot believe you did the exact thing I asked you not to do. And sometimes I've realized he's like, you know, there's like a little 12-year-old boy in there dying to get out. And so if I say, don't do this, he's sure to do it, you know. But what I had to learn, and I think what we learn as couples, is that, you know, our spouse is not a reflection of us, that he's a whole and complete person with or without me. And, you know, I grew up in a family that was a lot, you know, we didn't talk our business out on the street, and it was all about how we looked, and as long as we looked like we were a happy family, we must be. And so I spent a lot of my life sweating the little stuff, you know, a lot of outside stuff. Gotta have this, gotta have that. And I had learned through my own relapse that, you know, I had all the stuff, but I didn't have me on the inside. And without that, you know, I had to get a sense of self-worth that wasn't reflected through the man that I was with. And I had all the stuff, and I was still miserable and lonely, and that led to my relapse. And so it was, in fact, for me, that nuclear blast that allowed me to start my recovery over. And allowing myself to be with John is a part of that rebirth of Carol, that he is who he is. I am who I am. But our shared values supersede our differences. And those values include things like, you know, integrity. Both of us, you know, I spent a lot of my life when I was using lying. It really matters to me today not to lie. It caused me a lot of heartache. You know, things like if we're going to say we're going to do something, we do it. And that includes with his daughter. And I have to say something here about children. You know, I spent a lot of my adult life saying that I was childless by choice. And then I married John, and with him at the time came a 4-year-old daughter. And she spent all of her time going in between us like this, pushing us apart when we first met. And I, of course, had read every self-help book there is about step-parenting and how to get along and all this stuff. And we lived together for the year before we got married, and I had painted her room and done all this stuff to, you know, make it cute for kids. And she came in, she looked at the room, she threw herself on the bed, and she goes, I hate it, and burst into tears and said, you and Daddy are going to have a baby when you get married and forget all about me. And one of the things I was able to do is to look her in the eye and say, you are our baby. This is the only baby we're going to have. And I kind of thought that early on in our marriage that the kid was just something I had to suffer through. And what a gift, the gift of the principle of open-mindedness, that I stayed just this willing to let that child into my heart, even though I didn't think I had what it took to be a mother myself. And she has been a gift, and she's been a challenge in ways, and that's the thing about marriage. You get all these gifts, and you get to be a richer person yourself by facing the challenges that come along with marriage. And John's daughter, Mary Page, was at first a challenge, and now she's become one of my greatest gifts. What I didn't realize is that by watching kids grow up, you get to relive your age during their ages. And nobody told me that. It wasn't written in any of the self-help books about step-parenting. And so when she was 7, I remember we were at a ballet recital or something, and I just burst into tears. And John's looking over at me like, what is going on? And I wasn't in menopause then. And, you know, nobody had ever been to a recital for me. My parents didn't show up for that kind of stuff. They didn't have what it took to do that. They would pay for me to go to those classes, but I was one of the kids whose parents never came to anything like that. And I was feeling that as she was going through those things. And you know, watching Mary Page growing up has allowed me to kind of put my childhood in its proper perspective along the way. And humanizing John has similarly allowed me to put my own past in its perspective, my hideous, desperate past. I mean, I was the type of person when I was using that if you rejected me and dumped me, I would like light your garage on fire. You know, I was like a closet whack job stalker type. And don't all laugh out there. There's some of you out there too, I know. And I'm happy to report I didn't do that in recovery, but I was still my own form of stalker because I needed you to make me feel whole. And now, you know, the joke has really been on me that once you get, you know, you think that when you get married, you're going to hit some nirvana or something. And all it's done for me is allow me the comfort and the security to get busy on working myself, that I was too busy searching for someone else to fix for me. And it's allowed me to go in search of myself. And I'm happy today to say that, you know, through my relapse and through my marriage and through my own emotional maturity, because I'm convinced we kind of mature late in here, you know, it's allowed me to find Carol on the inside. And when we have a safe and secure marriage, we can then become the best people that God wanted us to be. And that's really one of the great things that this marriage has allowed, is that each of us, we are full and complete individuals on our own. I think we both can say we feel better about who we are today than we did 10 years ago, 11 years ago when we were married. And it's, I have now, I take myself with me everywhere I go. I'm not one way at work, one way in Richmond, one way here or there. You know, it was kind of very cathartic for me. I used to, when I was using traipse around the country and see this band, The Grateful Dead, and I went for the first time clean and enjoyed it last week in D.C., and it was very cathartic to me to be the same person. I didn't have to be a deadhead one place, and it's like I take Carol with me everywhere I go. I've got a sense of myself in my gut, and having Narcotics Anonymous be in my loins and in the core of our marriage has allowed us to be the people that I think God always intended us to be. You know, the other thing I have to say about with John, you know, I had always said that, you know, judged other people who dated newcomers or who kept people who were relapsing. You know, you got to get rid of her if she's using. And it's a whole different thing when you're the one that's using, you know. And I'm so incredibly grateful. And I know that I would not be standing here today without a loving God and the support that John gave me. Now, there was some shock value to it. He called up my family before he'd ever met them and told them if they didn't show up at the family program at the treatment center that I was at, that he'd probably meet all of them at my funeral. And my little stuffy family was kind of stunned at that. But they got the message, and they posted in a way that they had never posted for me before, because they had done these and done these and done these and done these, and they were kind of done with the whole thing. And I think that we understand through facing the challenges of, as you heard John and everything he said, believe it or not, I agree with. You know, we face the issues around money, and you know, if you're one of those people that have the mistaken notion that the person who makes more money in the relationship holds all the power, please leave that misbroken construct here today before you leave. Please do that. It is a surefire way to put a hole right through the stake, put a stake in the heart of your relationship. First of all, it's not true. But second of all, it's very painful. And third of all, I didn't grow up wanting to be the one that wore the pants in the family anyways. I married a man because I wanted a man. Who makes the money is not the issue. It just isn't. And when you have equality in a marriage and humility and you know what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are, John knows what his are, they work. You adapt, you figure it out. And I think, you know, it's an ongoing struggle. You heard John being very honest about where he is with that. And you know, I've had my own issues with it. But the issue is that it's all for one and one for all. That issue of unity is what kind of gets you over the hump, whether it's parenting or sex or money, which are hot spots for every couple. And I also have a very sense of pride. I might say bad things about John, but you had better not, you know? And he's very loud and he's kind of out there. And when I first was gonna marry him, a lot of people in his area took me aside and said, do you know what you're getting into here? And I do know. I got it now. I got what I'm getting into, and I've got how grateful I am that he's in my life, and he's mellowed some of my sharp edges. I don't iron my tablecloths before parties now. I'm not as uptight as I used to be, and I hope I'm not as controlling. I think that I'm not. I hope I'm not. And I've also... I've also worked on and enjoyed not always having to be first fiddle. I've learned how to be supportive when when your spouse is being the one that's being recognized and adulated for great successes they have. It's been a great experience for me to learn how to step back and be the supportive wife. And there's a certain honor and dignity in that, which I used to think that was submissive. And it's not submissive. It's being there for someone in the way that you want them to be there for you.
You know, she was asking me, well, what's the good things out of being married? What are we leaving with? And I was thinking, well, I know one thing I can do really good now. I can throw a hell of a party, man. My wife has taught me how to entertain. And I know the value of Christmas decorating, too. I didn't know you could spend 400 hours decorating a house for Christmas. But even this past year, when the smoke alarm went off because she was burning stuff as usual when she tried to cook, the fire trucks just showed up at 2 a.m. thought it was kind of odd that we were up decorating and getting ready for a party. And I said, we do this all the time, don't worry about it. Not since my days in the Marine Corps have we planned like this and stayed up for all hours in the morning getting things done. You know, old timers will get this when I get ready to say it, and the newcomer will figure this out one day. But when you see a newcomer come into the room and you get to watch that person grow up and watch them recover and pick up those anniversary medallions, and 5 years go by, they get a medallion, 10 years. And whatnot. Well, I think our relationship has kind of been like that for me. Not so much watching her, the newcomer, become an old timer, but watch her struggle with her life and then be part of the improvement process. And of course, I think I might be getting worse while she's getting better. I don't know. I ain't figured that part out yet. But this is a woman who, 11, 12 years ago, she didn't feel like she would love or accept it in the Richmond area. And she may have been frowned upon, I don't know. But today, she's got so many friends in NA down in Richmond, I can't hardly talk about her anymore without somebody calling her up, snatching on me, saying, John was saying this about you. So she got me really watching what I say down there now in these meetings. I think it was last year, she was invited a bunch of us up to do some rooftop photographs for Newsweek magazine. They did a story on addiction and they needed some real faces and voices of addicts. So me and some of the folks from our foundation went up there. And it was probably 0 degree wind chill factor on the rooftop of her office building that overlooks the Capitol. And I went up there in a lightweight clothes. I'm freezing my butt off. I lived in Vermont, I've been to South Korea, this was cold. And she was cold too. But we were standing there, I think it was something like this, and I was sitting there telling her, I was cussing, I don't want to say what I said in here, but it was bad, and I just, this is so cold, blah, 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 and we looked at each other and probably kissed, right? But that's the picture that was in Newsweek magazine, and she got it hanging in her office wall, and her other drunk lobbyist friend came in there one day crying, man, y'all look so happy. I wish I could have that relationship with my wife. And the truth of the matter is, I mean, we have a fabulous relationship. For some, it could be envious, I imagine, I wouldn't choose to pick a different woman, I really wouldn't. And I just got this But one hand is great sense and acknowledgement that I'm married to who I'm supposed to be married to. I'm in the relationship I'm supposed to be in. And every single day, yes, we can certainly have our differences. Every day. That never goes away. Disappointment for some folks out there. And some of them are bad. I mean, every other day I'm telling myself, I'm out of here. I ain't putting up with this crap no more. But, you know, dinner time all around, I know where to go, you know? I think I've been home every single night for the whole time. I mean, one time I'd like to just not come home just to see what would happen, you know? I haven't had a need to do that yet. I'm saving that for the big one. But I don't, you know, I've heard a lot of relationship workshops over the years, and, you know, I don't, who knows what's good or bad, right or wrong. I do know if, when I don't use no matter what, and I tell on my disease, and I stay focused on my journey, and most important, when I seek God's will, not my will, everything seems to be okay, to include in my relationship with my wife, in my relationship with other folks, in my relationship with God and whatnot. So I know we're running out of time, I think. And knowing my wife, we can certainly talk for hours and hours about this, myself included, of course. But last thing you want to say before we go? Now's the time.
I think that for me, when I started to learn that I could not make another person responsible for my happiness and had to get busy on working on Carol on the inside, that I started being able to give John a break and not try to manage him. And, you know, our first of all, it's impossible, but our relationship has flourished, and my respect for myself and him and for the incredible power that is behind a couple in recovery and what they can accomplish together and as individuals. Thank you.
Thank you.